welcome to the episode. I'm thrilled that you're here. My name is Nadia Felsch. I'm a feminist anti-diet nutritionist and certified intuitive eating counselor. In this podcast, we explore the practical aspects of leaving the diet mentality behind and finding your own food and body freedom. This episode is nutrition myth busting. If you love this episode, I am completely open to creating a series. So do let me know once you've listened. And for today, I will be covering four very common nutrition myths. They are, number one, are serving sizes portion sizes? The second, you don't need carbs. The third, nighttime eating isn't good for your metabolism. And the fourth, is craving sweets after a meal a sign of deficiency? So let's dive in. All right, so the first nutrition myth that I'm going to be covering, something I hear all the time, are serving sizes portion sizes? In short, no. I actually just had this chat with a client this past week, and she found this a very helpful answer. No. You decide your portions. And if it feels like you don't know, you couldn't possibly know, I gently disagree. And I want to empower you to listen to your own needs and validate as well. That might not be or feel possible to you. It might not feel or be accessible. Hence why this work is what to invest in. Knowing that for yourself, understanding and accessing that knowledge and trust for yourself, not learning arbitrary portion sizes. So why is this a no then? I want to kind of encourage you to consider, like, who determines a serving? Have you ever thought about that before? Do you feel like there's this body of nutritionists, dietitians that get together and decide, okay, this is a portion that's good for human health? You know what? I've never really thought about it. As in, before my career in this space, I'd never thought about it myself, but that might be something you think about. And I think it's a really reasonable consideration or expectation. So what I really want you to know is that who determines a serving size on a packet is whoever has manufactured it. It is way less about nutrition health needs than really you could ever appreciate. It is about marketing. It is about the dollar value, the perception, for instance, that we have. Like, if something says four serves and you see that it's $5, you might be thinking, great, that's such good value for money because I'm going to be able to eat said thing four times. The thing is, what if you actually want the whole packet? So there is a vested interest in a manufacturer making this look like, for instance, good value. So therefore they make more profits. Again, that looks like solid marketing to be able to advertise how much you get from something. This also, particularly in Australia, relates to the Health Star rating, which is a, you know, very necessarily critiqued system, but just kind of keeping on topic of like why this is important. A manufacturer is going to update those numbers, like play with them, right? Until it looks like, okay, we're going to get an official Health Star rating for said serve because of it's got this much sugar in it, it's got this much salt in it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And another way to think of this is it's allowing a buy-in from a diet culture perspective. If the manufacturers, again, play with the numbers, it's going to look appealing to, oh, wow, that's got really low sugar. That's got blah, 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 whatever we're kind of targeting in that moment as a consumer. So bottom line, the manufacturers are choosing these serving sizes. And I really want to encourage you to consider, why is it that you might trust them more than yourself? Again, remember what I said, if it feels like you can't imagine trusting yourself to know what to eat, that's the work to invest in, as opposed to learning about arbitrary portion sizes. If it is helpful to you, as I offered to my client that I mentioned earlier, serving sizes are really about packaging and often, therefore, marketing and profits. Portions are what you are going to choose to eat. They are not the same thing, and you also don't need to be so wrapped up with any of this. Pasta, could we be clear, has never, ever, ever been four serves because I'm pretty sure that's what they say. No one No one is feeling that that is true, right? It's a whole box. It might be two serves. So again, the serving size isn't something to worry about and get wrapped up in, and it isn't a portion size. All right, myth number two, you don't need carbs. Clearly, it is a myth. This is not true. You absolutely require carbs. So a little science here, very important. All carbohydrates break down in your body and mine and everyone's to glucose molecules. And these are what our bodies run on. They are literally how we create energy. Carbs from white sugar, carbs from seeded bread, from brown rice, white rice, from pumpkin seeds, from broccoli. You hearing me? The carbs in these foods, all of them, break down in the body to glucose molecules, because you can think of it like this is glucose, the body's global currency, right? It can't get what it needs from the bigger pieces. That's just kind of an easier way to think about it. It needs the smaller pieces, and that's glucose. Also important to know is that your brain runs exclusively on glucose molecules. You actually have what's called the blood-brain barrier, quite a mouthful. Try say that in an exam really quick. Clearly, I have that experience. So your brain can only have glucose coming up through that blood-brain barrier. It cannot have other forms of food broken down. It needs the glucose. If your brain doesn't have energy, you are not alive. So that's really important to know. It can only consume glucose. Now, we have, because y'all might be having some questions right now, and I hope I'm about to answer them. We actually need carbs so much that we actually have a few backup processes in our bodies, so clever we are, in the event that there is insufficient carb intake. Now, this can be intentional or not, doesn't matter. The body doesn't know these things, right? So the first of which I've talked about on this pod before, we have a neurotransmitter called neuropeptide Y. This has a few jobs, but one of its jobs is that when we are in deficiency, insufficiency, full stop. So say we haven't eaten for a number of hours. Our blood sugar levels are getting quite low, which is our blood glucose levels. They're getting quite low. And this neuropeptide, which I've talked about before, is in charge of creating more of a desire in you to look for food, right? It's quite primal, like eat, eat, eat. That's kind of what it's trying to get you to do. It's making things more palatable and more exciting, getting you more focused on food because it's important that you act and eat. What it's doing simultaneously is increasing your focus on carbohydrate-containing foods because they are so efficient and necessary in the body. So that's one of the backup systems. We also have a process called glycogenolysis, and this is what's happening when what is stored, glucose is stored in our muscles, our liver, and our skeletal muscles as really in case of emergency. Now, we might be using these regularly, particularly if we are quite active and potentially we haven't eaten enough in the day. We get to a workout, we get to our sport, and we're churning through our glucose stores. And so this is why we've got an emergency supply. It doesn't last very long. It's a short-term backup system. And then another backup system that I think gets a lot of attention, but for all of the wrong reasons, is this incredibly clever process in the body called gluconeogenesis, also quite a mouthful, in an exam. And this process is actually what's happening when a human is in true ketosis, meaning there is insufficient carb intake in their dietary intake, so in their body. And gluconeogenesis actually creates glucose from other non-carbohydrate sources. So from proteins that we eat or that we have broken down in the body in the form of amino acids, which you might have heard of. We also can make it from fat, from dietary sources of fat, and yes, from stored fat, lipids in our body. This is a backup process in the body. Let me be clear again. This is because carbs are so, so necessary. So takeaway, carbs are 100% necessary for optimal human function. And in fact, dietary guidelines all around the world, the globe over, places the carb group as the one that we need the most of. And I'm talking about when compared to proteins and when compared to fats, the three groupings of foods we call macronutrients. So here in Australia, our dietary guidelines suggest that someone's overall makeup of their nutrition has between 45 and 65% of carbohydrates. Now, this surprises a lot of people because we as a society are so focused on protein, protein, protein. People are often really surprised that carbs fit and sit rather at the top of the needs. And I think another reason this is because often folks, maybe you too, don't realize how many foods are actually considered a carbohydrate. People are still surprised when I let them know that vegetables and fruits, all of them are carbohydrates. So carbs equals life. We don't need to hate on them. We don't need to fear them. All right, myth number three. Nighttime eating is not good for your metabolism, and three from three, this is a no as well. You know what's really ironic about this very diet vibes myth is that in practice, it might look like someone doesn't eat past, say, 6 p.m. I've heard that, 7 p.m. even, or they just don't eat enough, right? Oh, I can only have a light meal. And you know what? That's not helpful for your metabolism that actually wants regular, satisfying eating. So I want to kind of invite you to consider with this myth that there is no 24-hour clock that is, you know, observing or needing a particular food intake. You know, I understand that's how we live in the world. You know, we live under capitalism. Our lives are very structured by necessity of survival, but our food needs aren't in agreement with that, right? When you go to sleep, your body doesn't turn off. In fact, there is so much happening when you sleep. The rest equals repair. Lots and lots of repair is happening in the evening. You still need energy, which you get from nutrition. It's still necessary. I mean, that's the main part of sleep that's happening. You have a very clever body with processes that require energy. And again, regular satisfying eating is supportive for your body. So I gently invite that to be your priority over eating before or after a specific but also very arbitrary time. The body is not following some kind of weird dinner time. That's it. Can't eat anything else till the morning. That's not rooted in anything evidentiary or what your body is requiring. All right, myth number four, is craving sweets after a meal a sign of deficiency? Let me tell you, a few weeks back, I was sent a DM and I have permission to read this DM. I'm going to quote it for you. All right, the DM asked me, is it normal to crave something sweet after savory foods? Doesn't mean I'm not getting enough nutrition or nutrients from the foods that I eat. It doesn't seem to matter what I eat or how much I eat. My body craves sweet after savory. It's not even necessarily quote unquote fun foods, but just something sweet. Love this message. Love the DM. Thank you to the human that sent it. So we're going into this episode 4 for 4. No, this is not true. It is not true that craving sweets after a meal is a sign of deficiency. First and foremost, this is pseudoscience. Like, wow. The idea that you wanting foods, and let's be clear, not accepted foods, right? We as a society think sweet foods are just so problematic, right? So that therefore means if you want those, you must be lacking in something. And like, let's be clear, there's a capitalist agenda here because now you must need something to optimize your diet, maybe some freaking rubbish supplement, blah, blah, blah. You get where I'm going here, right? That's kind of where a lot of this idea sits. So can we think critically here and acknowledge that the myth, it is a myth, and the pseudoscience surrounding kind of the propagation of this myth, this exists because I've already kind of said it. There is a very strong narrative in our society that every food choice must be solely about the maximum nutrient value that you can get, and that's it. That is also not true. That is also, you know, not necessary. It's rooted in healthism and anti-fatness. So let me ask you, would you believe this myth if you didn't fear that you'd gain weight from eating and that that was terrible? If you didn't constantly hear sugar is so bad and it causes diabetes, again, that is incorrect. Even the word crave, I believe we need to flesh out a little bit more. This has a very healthist application. So can we normalize just wanting yum? Can we normalize wanting what we want, maybe pleasure? maybe a balance of flavors that enhances our eating experience and therefore enhances our nutrition. Yes, that's truth. This person said it's like they just have to. So I gently invite you to anyone who is feeling this way, reclaim crave and craving as want and desire, and also feel pretty neutral about it. It isn't this gluttonous, evil, disastrous thing that we're taught, right? I really, really invite you to, not gently, actually, I strongly invite you to reclaim craving as its true definition and not this weird healthist vibe that we are kind of picking up on in society. I remember, I guess it was close to 10 years ago now, I traveled to Vietnam, which was an incredible trip for 3 weeks. What a gift. It wasn't a gift, but you get what it was, a joyous, grateful experience. And when we were in the kind of the center of the country, we were in Hoi An, an incredible destination. We went on a cooking tour. Now, if you are familiar with me and my work, you know I don't love cooking, but I would say 10 years ago, I was probably more interested in cooking. And we went to a cooking class of a very famous chef, a brilliant woman who was quite an entrepreneur in that area. And she ran a cooking school, the Morning Glory Cooking School. Yes, look her up. And the class was fantastic. We cycled. Wow, I'm really getting off track here, but I'm setting the scene, okay? We cycled through these incredible rice fields. We met people that farmed the earth, the ground. We talked about different ingredients. And then we went back to one of her beautiful kitchen spaces and did a class. Now, what I remember learning so much from that class and the way that we were really taught about Vietnamese balance in cooking is balance. Like I've just said it. Things that are sweet still have other elements to them. Things that are spicy still might have sourness to them. And in my kind of, I'm going to be clear, a non-Vietnamese take, a white person take, and my memory here is that actually all these elements, all these senses are important in Vietnamese cooking. Sweet, sour, spicy, you know, savory, like it, salty. That's what I'm trying to say. And always open, if I've kind of like messed that up, if anyone with more knowledge wants to update my knowledge. But that is really something I took as this is so normalized. And I'm sure this is not the only example of this around the world. And how is it we've come so far from that when we think of balance? So I personally don't always have what this DM described, but I would say most of the time after eating, particularly if I'm eating something that's a little on the drier side or a little bit more kind of same textures, like avocado toast is a great example. To me, it's kind of like, it's a bit mushy. I mean, I love it, but like there's not intensity to it, right? And what I find I often want, especially in the morning, is like fresh fruit. Straight away. Now that's also sweet, but for me, what's interesting is less so the sweet and more about the freshness. But I acknowledge I don't want, say, cucumber. Cucumber is also really fresh and I love it. So maybe I do want something sweet to balance the savory. And to me, that's such a natural thing to desire, to crave. Remember, we're reclaiming that. So no. Craving something sweet after eating is not a sign of a deficiency and not even something necessarily to be concerned with. That is the 4 myths. What did you think? As I mentioned at the top of the ep, if you like this, if you want more, let me know. If there are specific myths in nutrition that you want me to address on this pod, I invite you to share them in our Food and Body Freedom community. Join us free on Facebook. For all of the links and the notes from today's exploration of nutrition myth busting, head to my website, which is nadiafelsch.com/podcast. Alternatively, you'll find the link in your podcast player. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to being with you again soon.